My ambition after that trip to the Highlands was simply to see if Tasmania could make a really good single malt whisky.
We don't expect everyone to like these wines, so yes, there's some risk.
Drink more sherry, because that's when you can really educate yourself on what happens in maturation.
The thing is with Australian natives, you put them in a gin, the aftertaste invariably is just bitter and unpalatable.
I think the Irish whisky landscape is going to be wildly different over the next 5 years.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson, and this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine and spirits, and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today.
When Seb Costello opened the cocktail bar Bad Frankie in Melbourne in 2014, he did something that was almost unthinkable at the time, creating a drinks menu comprised completely of Australian craft spirits. Seb understandably became known as a champion of Australian distilling. This, coupled with his sensory skills and broad appreciation for different spirits categories, saw him appointed Chief Judge of the Australian Distilled Spirits Awards in 2020. At the time of this episode going to air, Seb and the other judges, led by new Chief Judge Sean Byrne, are preparing to appraise this year's entries to the ADSA, the only spirits competition endorsed by the Australian Distillers Association. This seemed like the appropriate juncture to have a long overdue chat with Seb about craft spirits in Australia. First up, we get his reflections on those 3 years as lead official of the ADSA.
Mate, it has been a really wonderful opportunity and a really great experience to be the head judge of the Australian Distilled Spirits Awards put on by Melbourne Royal. I fell into it through Bad Frankie, the bar I had, which was based All Australian Spirits in Fitzroy. And at the time when we started in 2014, there was 20 distilleries and about 80 products. And now there's, you know, I think there's 600 and something distilleries and any number of products, you know, maybe 1,500 now. So, yeah, so it was just my love of Australian spirits that got me invited to go in. I was just a judge, so there's a panel of four, and then there's usually a panel chair who's like in charge of that panel, and then there's the head judge who's in charge of it all. So Sam Bygrave was the head judge when I started, and then I was a head judge, and then a panel chair, and then I went to a head judge, which was really good. So, yeah, I feel like I just sort of fell into it a little bit, but then having discussions with distillers, going to a lot of distillers, going to a lot of masterclasses, going, you know, out and tasting a lot of product really helped me become the head judge. And then the fact that I was A, not tied to a distillery, and B, across every category was really helpful for being a head judge. I think that was two really good points, because, you know, people who like gin often love gin and then maybe not drink a lot of whiskey. People who drink a lot of rum don't drink a lot of brandy. People who love liqueurs probably don't like vodka as much or something like that, you know. So it was great that I was across all those categories coming from the sort of a cocktail world.
Yeah, and are there judges at the awards that it's not like everyone's judging everything. It's like you have specialists that would just do gin or specialists that would just do whiskey?
Absolutely. So on each panel we try and have an array of judges, usually someone who's a bartender or bar focused, then a distiller is always good to have on there, and then, you know, a writer or and then another distiller or something like that. So you want to take those deep dives.
When it came to your own sensory skills, was that kind of just developed in the field, you know, at Bad Frankie? I'm sure you would have tasted everything that came across the bar and was offered to you to range in the bar, but also just kind of working with distillers, or was there any actual sort of formal training that you did as well?
I would have loved to do some formal training. There was no formal training that I could see. So a lot of it was just tasting, which was excellent. You'd go to a lot of educational events, you know, tastings, whiskey masterclasses, gin masterclasses, all this sort of stuff. I've been to distilleries all around the world, so I got a really good grasp of what spirits should taste like and how they taste, and just tasting a lot of spirits really helps. I think the best thing about the Australian Distilled Spirits Awards is it's been put on by Melbourne Royal, and they've been judging things for 175 years. So Melbourne Royal are the people who do the Royal Melbourne Show, and they used to be called the Royal Agricultural Society of Victoria, and they've been around for 175 years. They put on the show and then they judge things. So they've been doing the beers the last 30 years, They've been doing wine judging since 1884. So that's 140 odd years of judging wines. I was actually having a dinner the other night at the showgrounds, and there was someone who was sitting next to me was the dairy cow judge, and the other person was the meat cow judge. And they didn't know different varieties, how to judge them, anything like that, because they stick to the one thing, right? That's what judging's all about, trying to find excellence, trying to find this what makes it amazing and taking those real deep dives into one specific thing. So, you know, you talk about the CWA and the sponge cakes, you know, like not many people eat 50 sponge cakes in a day, but the CWA judges do. So, you know, you really get that level of nuance, which makes it really good and really bad. And I think that's really important.
You mentioned that, you know, you are a bit of an all-rounder, but would you consider yourself kind of better versed in some categories than others?
No, well, I've taken on a new job at the moment, which is head gin judge at the Spirit Awards. So there was about 820 products last year, and about 400 of them were gins. So Sean Byrne, who's going to be the head judge coming up, I'll be looking after all the gins underneath him. There'll be about 20, 24 people judging all the gins. So I'll try and be across all those panels to judge them. So I do really enjoy gin. I love judging gin. There wouldn't be a spirit that I don't like.
Yeah. And what about, you know, how did the awards kind of evolve over the 3 years that you were there? Because really it's a pretty pivotal period for the industry in terms of a lot of new distilleries coming to market, a lot of new age spirits coming to market during that period of time. Did you see that the awards were quite different each year?
Yeah. Well, the thing that's probably happened in my tenure, which has been great, obviously we've had a big boom. Like, I think it's from about 200 products to about 820. The quality's always been quite high, which has been really good, but then the style's changed a little bit as well. I find that, you know, Australian whiskey is still big and rich and bold, but it probably was a bit, I wouldn't say rough, but a bit edgier. And now it's sort of, you know, getting a little bit more age to it. It's getting a little bit more refinement to it. I think, you know, the distilleries are coming through their second and third generation. So I think it's working out really nicely that way. So we've got, and we're slowly getting an Australian style of whiskey, which is really exciting. I think we've really had a boom in cane spirit as well. So not so much rum. It's not aged, so it's got to be something else, and we called it cane spirit. And that's pretty exciting as well. There's a lot of cane spirits coming on. So, you know, your sort of agricole-style rums and things like that, which are really delicious, but you just can't call them rum in Australia because they haven't been aged. Yeah, they're really exciting products, which I'm really looking forward to seeing how they go. Amaro's gone nuts, you know, like you couldn't get, you know, an Amaro-style drink. Now there's probably 10 or 15 agave spirits coming on, and wine gin has been a huge boom in the market. There wasn't such a thing of wine gin about 4 or 5 years ago, and now, you know, we'd be tasting 30 or 40 of them at the awards.
You mentioned that we're starting to see like the emergence of an Australian whiskey style, which is really interesting. What does that look like?
The good thing about Australian whiskey is it's, you know, it's made from a lot of the malt barley grains that are usually beer, not so much distilling varieties. So you get really big, heavy malts into it. We're usually using small format stills as well, and sort of a very artisan sort of style. So you're getting big, heavy malts. You're getting really rich, delicious flavour out of them. You know, you're getting small format barrels, which give you a really big flavour. And a lot of them are usually seasoned with a few different, you know, wine or fortified wines or something like that. So, yeah, it's really exciting to see like Australian whiskey coming of age. So I think the industry as a whole, and you'd have to talk to sort of Luke McCarthy or Julian White from Whiskey and Almond, Luke McCarthy from Oz Whiskey Review, to sort of, they're the panel chairs to really give you a really good explanation of this. But, yeah, I feel like, you know, they're big, rich, young, bold, exciting, artisan whiskies.
What about gin? Are we kind of seeing an emergence of an Australian gin style?
The thing about the Australian gins and the botanicals that we use now, I think the botanicals are incredible, and I think what we wanted to do was just go big botanical and see how they worked in a gin, and that was sort of our place that we could sort of let people know that it's an Australian gin. Where now I think you know, it's getting more refined. We're using less Australian botanicals. We're having a reason for the Australian botanicals to be there instead of just saying, oh, well, here you go, here's some lemon myrtle or some river mint or some strawberry gum just because. Now they're a lot more refined. So that's happened with the judging as well. You know, it used to be big, rich, botanical-driven gins that, you know, would win a lot of the awards, where now I think it's a lot more of that subtle balance, that really lovely, well-integrated spirit that, you know, has got really good botanical mix, not so much just bang, here you go, here's some Australian botanicals. And that is one of the things we're trying to work at, is because in the gin category you've got classes of gins, so you sort of judge them like by like. So you've got, like, say, for instance, London Dry Style, you've got Navy Strength Gin, you've got Old Tom Gin. But what we're looking to do is sort of change it to have an Australian botanical gin or an Australian dry style of gin. And so we're just trying to figure out how the market wants to see that their product judged.
What are some of the most common faults that we see in Australian spirits currently?
We're really lucky with the fact that not many spirits get really dudded. The majority of Australian spirits are really high quality. A lot of them would get at least an award, if not, you know, silver or gold. Some faults we do find, obviously, sort of some heads or tails coming through, you know, over-oaked or young, fast-matured whiskey is sometimes really prevalent, and you can find that, and, you know, that will mark you down. And there's, you know, maybe a poor-based spirit in the gin, or you've got, you know, botanicals are not so integrated, that's not really pleasant as well. And probably with liqueurs and things like that, you know, maybe the freshness of the fruit or the sugar mixed in wouldn't work as well, or the alcohol isn't integrated. So we sort of let people know that as well. But this is probably a part of the competition as well, which we take really seriously. So we want to help, like, the whole idea of these awards is we want to help the industry. So when you get a gold, you want to celebrate that. Fantastic, that's a gold. It's absolutely delicious. But then the whole idea is that when you do get something that's not great, you've got to pick it apart and you've got to tell someone why. I was talking to Richard Angove, who runs Angove's Wines, and he's also makes St. Agnes Brandy, and he's fifth generation winemaker distiller. He said that the judging wine judges or wine competitions, what you'll do is you'll, because you always taste yours at your distillery, you always taste yours, tasting. But when you go to the wine competitions, you get to taste yours as well as the gold, as well as the ones around it, as well as the ones that won silver, the ones that won bronze. So, you know, and that's where we want to get to. We want to help the industry. You know, it's great that you can say, okay, ours got a bronze, or, you know, what can we do better? Geez, we've got to integrate it a little bit better. What won this year? So we go and buy those gins, we go and buy those gold medals, we taste them and we say, right, how can we make this not as the same, but how can we make this similar? What are they doing a bit better than us? So it really creates a great environment of learning and making better spirit. So I think that's the thing, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, what would you say was the most improved spirit category during the time that you were head judge?
I really think rum and cane spirit have, I said it before, but rum and cane spirit are really going through a beautiful patch at the moment. Rum has a really diverse flavour profile. You know, you can go like a big dunder rum. You can, you know, taste something that's really clean and really easy, really light. You know, something that's just got a little bit of oak, something that's got heaps of oak. You know, so there's something that's really molassesy, something that's really, you know, got a whole heap of sugar cane and really light and fresh. So there's a huge learning space that happens there, and people take a deep dive and get lost in rum for ages. But I feel like the majority of people haven't done that yet. I think they've done that with whiskey. There's, you know, you can really geek out with whiskey. You can go to places like Whiskey and Almond or Baxter's Inn or, you know, Boilermaker House and all these places and the Elysian, and really geek out about whiskey. Whereas I think with rum, you know, we're coming to that, and there are a few rum places, but yeah, if you take a deep dive into rum, it's just so incredible. And we've got some producers now that are making incredible, incredible rum. And I think it just takes that time to educate the punter.
I mean, you obviously have sold the bar. You know, was that a difficult decision that you came to? What prompted you to move on from Bad Frankie?
Yeah, look, that was a huge undertaking emotionally for us. So the main reason was we had kids. So we had kids. So, my wife wanted to go back to work and I had a really great 8 years at Bad Frankie. And so we wanted to move on. Yeah, as I said, I think bars are time and a place sort of situation. And what we actually looked at, which made it the reason why we sold it, was we looked at Bad Frankie and we had a mission statement at the start of any business. You have a mission statement, and ours was to, be a great local bar, be known around Australia and maybe around the world. We wanted to boost Australian spirits and we wanted to educate people and give people a great environment to have a drink in and be a massive part of the community. And so we sort of had those talking points. And then we got to 8 years and, we were like, hey, we've nailed all these. Like, I feel like we were all those things to people. We could have just kept going. We could have kept going. But, I had to move on with my life. I had to look after my kids. I was really excited about that. It was another chapter in my life. So we thought, let's give it to another custodian. And Chris at the moment, he's got it now and he's doing exactly the same thing and absolutely nailing it. So I think that's the thing, right? And I think we all know, you can think back to that favourite bar you had when you were each stage of your life, when you were 18, when you were 21, when you were 25, when you were 30, when you were 35. You had those time and a place, and that's what's really special. So to try and keep those going forever probably doesn't work. It does work for a few people. You have a look at, Gin Palace or Black Pearl or those sorts of institution bars. They've just absolutely nailed it. But, I think a lot of the time you just needed a time and a place, and I think Bad Frankie had that wonderful time and a place where I was a part of it, which was great.
Yeah, and I think anyone who runs a bar continuously for 8 years and then leaves on their own terms and the bar is still running today, I mean, you have to call that a resounding success in the world of hospitality, right?
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, look, it was great. And, I still get to go in there and have a drink and it's still a massive part of me. So, yeah, it was really, really wonderful time in my life.
And exciting announcement this week about the new head judge of the awards, Sean Byrne. What did you think about Sean's appointment?
Fantastic, yeah. I reckon he's excellent. He's a great judge. He knows all the categories really well. He's very opinionated and he's a lover of Australian spirits. He used to run Gin Palace for years when it was all kicking off. He has Maiden Eye and Marionette liqueurs as well. So he's just got this really great palate. He knows the industry inside out. He's a really fantastic fella, great advocate for the industry and a sensational judge. So, yeah, he will go really well. Really looking forward to working with him and, yeah, he will absolutely dominate it.
Tell us about your new gig. I understand you're doing some work with the National Distilling Institute.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So that's really exciting. So, yeah, I'm working with the National Distilling Institute and that's a sort of a partnership between the Australian Distillers Association and the National Food Institute. So they're a registered RTO, registered training organisation, and we're hoping to deliver training for distillers. So the main sort of shining light is to do the Certificate 4 in Artisan Fermented Products in brackets distilling. So that will be a distilling course that you can do, which will be Australian qualified, which is going to be really exciting. So the idea is just to keep boosting Australian spirits through education, which I think is a really important way to do it. I was reading this book, which is The History of Australian Wines from Max Allen. I think you can learn a lot off the wine industry. They talk a lot about the fact that when they started heavily working on education, that's when the wine industry went really well. If we can be a really great educator, if we can have world-class training, if we can start people on their learning journey, that's really, really strong for the industry. So that's what we're looking to do with the National Distilling Institute.
I mean, there's obviously already the IBD and there's WSET and those sorts of training organisations as well. So how does this kind of differ to those global structures?
So the only sort of difference in it, and we will hopefully look to work with those partners. So, WSET, they do a fantastic job of sensory. IBD do a fantastic job of sort of that theoretical science behind distilling. And then you've got the Distilling Institute, which is down in Tassie, which is fantastic for Anne and Gigby. And they do a lot of the sort of setup for a distillery and then a lot of the, you know, the business side of it. And as well, if you ever go to Old Kempton Distillery School with Mark Nicholson and Bill Lark's often there, like that is a fantastic course as well. And they all work really well in their space. But the main part with the National Distilling Institute is we've teamed up with the National Food Institute to become a registered training organisation. And so there are Australian qualifications that the Australian government has put out to say if you've learnt all these outcomes, then you are qualified to distill in Australia. And so that's the main goal of the the National Distilling Institute is to get a qualified course, Australian qualified course.
You know, how well advanced is that? Where are you at with that now? Can people sign up for it already?
Not yet, no. People can't sign up for it, unfortunately. We're getting the website up and coming, which is hopefully around pretty soon. And then we'll try and start using a few third party or micro credentials, which are just short courses to help you on your learning journey. But the certificate for in artisan fermented products, which is going to be the qualification, we will look to work with subject matter experts to get that information and write the course and make sure that it's compliant. And look, we hope to have that up by the end of the year, depending how we go, hopefully a little bit earlier, maybe a little bit later. But yeah, we really want to have that up and going as soon as possible.
And do you have any other roles within the industry other than what you're doing with the National Distilling Institute?
Yeah, I'm doing a few bits and pieces, but the major thing that I'm on the committee of the Spirits Victoria Association as well, and that's really exciting because they get to work with the state government to help build the industry. So at the moment they've given a $10 million grant out, which is just huge for the industry. So I'm really, really looking forward to seeing how that works. I think being from a bar industry, you know, we could work with all the distillers, and now in a government like working on this committee, we're working with all of industry as well, which is super exciting. And then I think with government comes great change. You know, if you look at the beer industry or the wine industry, which you should always, when you're talking about spirits, they've had really good connection with government, and that gets really good headway and movement. So if we want to be a strong industry going forward, I think we've got to have government help, and we've got to have a really great relationship with government. So being on the board of the Spirits Victoria Association really does help that, and I get to have a really good look at how really good government policy can really help an industry. So that's what we're trying to do, guide the government, and they're working really closely with us, with AgVic. And so, yeah, it's really, really exciting to see.
Awesome, mate. Sounds like a great initiative for the industry, and really been interesting having a chat with you today. So thanks for joining us on the show.
Oh, thanks, James. Really appreciate it, and keep up the great work.